The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and your drinking JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
What up, Primers? It's the eve of our 1,000th episode, and in the lead-up, we thought we'd throw some more Vancouver Whitecaps royalty, CEO and sporting director Axel Schuster, and manager Jesper Sorensen. Enjoy!
Well, listen, guys, the biggest story to date this year in Canadian football for me is the Vancouver Whitecaps, dominating on all fronts, tops in MLS, and of course into the final of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. All this for a team who many so-called experts picked to be mid-table at best this season, a team suddenly on the auction block, a team whose best player has been sidelined for most of the season, and a team who said farewell to a legendary and immensely popular coach in Vanni Sartini. Not bad. To explain it all to us is Vancouver Whitecaps head coach Jesper Sorensen. Jesper, welcome to Footy Prime. First question, though, I've been saying it all week. Let's confirm, it is Jesper, not Jesper, right?
Yeah. It's Jesper. It's Jesper.
It's Jesper.
It's Jesper.
Yeah, it's soft J. In Danish, J's are often soft. It's okay. A little bit different from the English language, yes.
You know what? We've been saying Jesper all week.
I haven't.
No, I've been saying Jesper. You've been saying Jesper.
I even looked it up in a pronunciation guide and said Jesper, so I apologize. Jesper. It's so unlike me to get a pronunciation wrong. welcome to the show, Jesper, anyway. All right, so congratulations on the season so far. It's been incredible. I think this is your first job outside of Denmark. Did you think MLS would be this easy?
No, I didn't. I don't find it easy though, but it might have been looked that way, but I don't find it easy, and I think it's a very interesting league, and I'm very happy for being here.
Is football no matter where you are,
No, football is a reflection of the culture you are playing it in, I think. I think if you play football and you watch it and see it in Italy, it's completely different from Spain, and it's completely different from Denmark, and it's different from North America, I would say. For instance, football in Denmark, we are a country where, we are brought up in the Scandinavian model. Of society, where we pay a lot of taxes and it's a lot of welfare systems, and but also the hierarchies are very low and very flat, we try to structure ourselves out of everything, and I think that it's everybody has to participate in every regard. So I think it's that's the way you play football in Denmark. If you look at how you play it in South America, maybe is quite different. You have, it's more hierarchy driven. The attackers don't work much in defense and have a lot of freedoms. And also, maybe in North America, it's a bit different. I will say though that in the MLS, there are so many teams playing so differently compared to some of the leagues I watch in Europe, where you can say that if you watch football from Spain, it's much the same way the players and the teams play. If you watch from Italy, it's there's a lot of similarities here. I think there's a lot of, and it's very interesting, a lot of difference in between the teams. I think that's very it's really fun to be a coach here.
You've had some experience, Jesper, of playing against Mexican opposition already. Talk about culture and a difference in cultures. We, playing with the national team against Mexico is always different. CONCACAF in itself is a different animal than anywhere else in the world, in my opinion. How have you managed to that? And have you studied the football in Mexico before you have played against those oppositions?
No, I haven't studied it before. But when I came here, of course, with the draw we had, we started looking at, firstly Monterrey and then Pumas, and now we have to look into Cruz Azul. But what I found about the Mexican way of playing is that it's also quite different from the MLS. It's a lot stop and go. It's also very star dominant. You have some big stars that allowed a lot of freedom also when they play, and it's whereas the MLS is way more at the same pace, going at the high pace all the time. The Mexicans play more like acceleration of pace and speed in the game. And then, of course, there's big differences in between the games as well. We saw Monterrey a little bit like Miami, where you have some big players, Canizares, Ramos, a little older players. That was some of the biggest stars. And then but they couldn't play at a high pace for the entirety of the game. And then you saw Pumas that was really strong, physically strong, very well organized, and also, you know, maybe a little bit more like us, actually, the way they played. So it was, it's been quite some difference we've met already.
Jesper, coming over from Denmark and this being your first job outside of the country, and you said yourself that football is a reflection of the culture. So did you see it? Were you hesitant to make that leap, or did you see it as a blank slate where you could marry your Danish approach with the Canadian values and everything about our society and how it would come to life on the pitch?
I think the things you have to ask yourself as a coach is, because really it's not a free ride to be a football coach, is do I have a opportunity to make the way I want to do things be a success here? And that's, otherwise you'll be out before you even get in, right? Mm-hmm. I had the fortune to have the experience to live 1 year in Canada before, and I knew a little bit about the culture and how things are in Canada. And I am decent in the language, so I can, you know, communicate with the players, and I communicate with the players, so I can get my message through. And I think that was very important for me. And then, of course, when you have the opportunity to go and experience something like the MLS, whereas it's completely different with the rules you have, how to put together your roster, the way you can also affect things, hopefully over time, and create something. I think that was intriguing, and I was blessed to having the opportunity, I would say, to go here, because as I know it, I think I'm the first Danish head coach in this league, and it's, you know, it's not something where I could just call one of my colleagues and say, hey, what is this and what do I have to look for? And so I think that it was, I thought that it was a good opportunity to also, for me, get the experience, but hopefully also succeed there. Mm.
You spent a year in Canada before. What were you doing? This is interesting to me.
I was a home dad. My wife, she's an oncologist. She worked in Toronto on a hospital, Princess Margaret Hospital in Toronto.
Wow.
Yeah, she had. She had some. She has a lot of research done with some of her colleagues from that hospital. So she got invited to stay there for 1 year, and I was home nursing our kids. They are big now, so it's that was the last opportunity I had to just pay them a little bit of pay a little bit back to them, because when we had our kids, I was a player, and you don't have much paternity leave when you're a player, right? So it right. was.
Is she working in Vancouver now?
No, she's working in Copenhagen, so she lives there. Yeah.
When was that? Yes, go ahead.
That was 18-19. It was the Toronto Raptors year.
Okay. Oh, right. It's a good year to come.
We went to a lot of basketball games. My kids also like basketball. We went there. They end up winning everything. So that was a good experience also. Yeah.
And TFC, actually, I believe, weren't a bad team then. I think that's one of those years they were bad, I think.
Yeah, they had a bad year. They just came off actually having a very good year the year before. I think they won, and then they had this long run into the Champions Cup. And then they had a very bad season overall in the MLS.
Yeah. Right.
Jesper, how old are your kids? How many do you have? And are they into football? Did they ever play? Was that
important? We got personal quick, Jesper, just so you know.
No worries. Let's get it over with. I have three boys, 24, 21, he turns 22 next week, and then 18. So they're big boys now. Yeah. And they're not much into football themselves now. Yeah. Emotionally, because they've been following their dad. The youngest, he plays, but the others, they don't.
I think I played with a teammate of yours, Klaus Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah. Where?
At Ipswich Town.
Sorry?
At Ipswich Town.
Wow. Yeah. He's but you know, I known Klaus since we were kids. We grew up in the same town. Yeah. Yeah. He was a couple of years older than me. And he was a great guy and a good player. And I also played with him many times.
Yeah, he was a fantastic guy. Really, really good.
Yeah, great guy.
Yeah.
Craig, was that when you played with Klaus, was that before or after Jesper played with Klaus?
That was after.
After, was it?
He went to Ipswich and then Everton, I think.
That's correct, yeah.
And then he went to Danish club in the Wolfsburg, I think.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah, he did well.
Yeah. We're talking about some of the great Danish players. I mean, there's a ton. I mean, 1992, as a football fan, I remember it really fondly still, that team. It was incredible.
Yeah.
But we're debating who is the greatest Danish footballer ever. And of course, Craig said Peter Schmeichel, I think, didn't you, Craig? Of course, because you're biased.
I actually said Laudrup.
Laudrup.
Jimmy said the
Schmeichel. I didn't want to be biased being a former goalkeeper.
No. You know, I think mostly would say Michael Laudrup. And I would say also maybe Michael Laudrup. We have Peter Schmeichel as well. Normally, goalkeepers are a case of themselves, right? It's a separate thing normally, but Peter Schmeichel was amazing. Michael Laudrup was such a graceful player. He was so elegant, and he was also great. We also had a former player back in the day that actually won when it was only European players, the Ballon d'Or. It was Allan Simonsen. He was called. He played for Borussia Mönchengladbach and played for Barcelona, and was also a great player. But I think Michael Laudrup maybe stands out as the one, but Peter Schmeichel definitely is in the conversation.
Had some people on social media saying, what about Christian Eriksen? He's got there as well, obviously, a wonderful footballer. Mm-hmm.
Pernille Harder?
Yeah. That's the best women's football player we had. Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Great as well.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. This is really unfair. 92, can you name the 11 in the final?
Yes, I think so. We had Schmeichel in goal. We had, but maybe we had an injury or two. But we had Lars Olsen was a captain. Then we had Kim Christofte. We had he went out in the. Yeah, maybe I can because we had an injury in the on the left wing back. Then we have Kent Nielsen. He played. Then we had. I should be able to. Torben Picnic, I think, played from the start.
Yep.
And then we had Henrik Larsen played. We had John Jensen playing. He scored in the final. We have Kim Vilfort playing. He scored in the final. We have Flemming Poulsen playing. We had Brian Laudrup playing.
You got it?
I got it?
Yep.
I'll
get back to this guy. Wow, that's right, embarrassing man. If I can get that.
It's not that embarrassing. It's pretty good.
It's long time. Yeah, it's pretty good. No, it was 92.
I'll get back to it. It's
all right. I won't give it to you yet, but if it pops in your head between now and the end of the interview,
I'll get it up. Yeah.
while we're on impressive Danish players, there's also two Danish coaches in the Northern Super League, in Katrina Petersen for the Ottawa Rapid and Enya Heiner Møller for Vancouver Rise. So did you lead the charge there with the influx of the Danish coaches into Canada?
I don't know.
Yeah,
it's quite funny that Anya is here, right? Because I worked with her also in the Danish Federation when I was under 21 coach for the Danish national team. So yeah, I work closely together with her, and she's great. And yeah, I'm happy for her and for our Rice team that they have her as a coach.
Have you enjoyed Vancouver?
Yeah.
As a city?
Yeah, I have. It's a great city. It's it's so beautiful. You know, having to compare with Toronto, that's way, it was a nice city as well, but it's way more busy. It's way more noisy. It's way bigger. Here it's so easy getting out of the town, getting out to this beautiful nature here. And I like that. And I like, you know, just take my ride my bike out south town, and then, you know, all of a sudden you are in beautiful mountainside with the coastline. It's great.
A Jesper bicycle, is it like a really streamlined mountain bike, like one of these fancy bikes, or is it like you have a bell and a basket and you have other things on it? What does the Jesper bike
in between? It's in between. I have a very, very nice, I invested in a very nice city bike here. I like it a lot because I take my bike out here to the training sessions. So it's great.
I think nice. I always thought when you brought up the bike, I was thinking Jesper is going to say, no, it's, I like to put a top hat on and have one of those giant big wheels with the little wheel in the back.
Penny
like
farthing.
This.
It's called a penny farthing.
Yeah. A penny farthing. That's what it is. Yeah.
No, it's too hilly here.
You should really get a Vespa and change the V to a J and just call it a Jespa.
Yeah.
That's what you should do.
Wow. I haven't thought of that.
This is what my brain does.
I apologize.
No.
Are you getting recognized yet when you're cycling around Vancouver, or are you still kind of on the down?
Not much when I'm cycling. I'm way too fast.
Let me ask about this team, though, of yours. You knew what you were getting into. I'm sure you did your research, obviously, your due diligence. Are you surprised just what a great season it's been so far on all fronts?
Yeah. Of course, I'm surprised. It's way beyond what I have expected. Also, you can hope for something, but not like this, I would say. So it's been way beyond what I've expected and hoped for, and I am surprised. Of course, I am. It's not that I don't see the players every day work their butt off and do everything that we try to make them do, and it's not that I don't see quality. But of course, having a season like this is not something that happens every day. So I think that it's a surprise for me.
Have you had to keep the players' feet on the ground, or you try to, because this is something that is difficult to maintain, this level of play, but not impossible. But obviously, you don't want that to get carried away.
I think there's two things. One, it's very difficult to maintain this level of result production. That's one thing. The other thing is the level of play. I hope that we can maintain and even, you know, exceed what we are doing now. But it doesn't mean that we'll get better results, because probably we won't. We will also lose games where we have the feeling that we were the better team that day, but we just lost because of the randomness there is in football results when you're looking at just one game. But overall, I think that it's, I don't want to try to get them, you know, get their feet down on the ground. I think it's nice if they can fly a little bit, due to confidence. We know that what has made us a good team, our work ethic, and, you know, the way we have paid attention to details, and players have been fully invested in what we have been doing. And that's what we have to continue with if we want to grow into becoming a very good team. And think the players know, because they get reminded every day. So I think that they know. But if they fly a little bit, and you know, then it's okay for me, because I think it's one of those moments you don't have that often, where you actually can allow yourself also the freedom that you feel good, that you also have some confidence, and that you also, you know, maybe fly a little bit. We are not going with our arms up over our heads in everyday work. We are working, and people are still very focused. So I think that's a good thing. And then the competition level in this group is good, and so it's also up to me to make sure that that becomes an advantage for us.
I was going to ask you, sorry,
Amy.
I think it's the same question.
So you've rotated really well. You mentioned competition for places. When Ryan Gold gets healthy, 100% healthy, does he walk into the 11?
Yeah, but what you say, you said when he gets healthy, and then you said when he gets 100% healthy, right? That will take some time because he's been out for a long while. And when he gets back healthy, we might have other issues with people getting injured. So, yeah, normally he will play for us. He's our captain. He has been the best player over the last couple of seasons. So normally he will go into the lineup. It will not be something that the other players should just hand over to him. But because the competition has to be there, but of course we'll be looking forward to having him back on the team as well.
So my question lines up nicely, I think, as a follow up to that. Just talking about Ryan Gold, but you must have come in, done your research, you knew what you were walking into, because I think in your opening day press conference you said it's not going to be a revolution, it's going to be an evolution of where the team was. But were you even surprised with the injuries to Ryan Gold, with the injuries to Sam Adekubi, to Nelson? You probably knew the talent that you had there. You've already alluded to the competition at each post, but did those players really surprise you in the way that you could rotate, you know, a few weeks ago, 8 players in your side and you still get the victory? Like, is that something that you knew was well established, or they proved it to you when you had to do it?
A little bit of both, I would say. First of all, the players have to prove that they have to get that they earn themselves the spot on the pitch, and then I think for me it's very important that we don't get too individual dependent, because you can have an injury, you can have a suspension, you can have things, and things will occur during the course of the season where you have to play without players that you normally think, wow, if we have to play without those guys, it will be difficult for us. Last week, if you had told me last week, 3 months ago, that we will play a game at home against Real Salt Lake where Ali Ahmed, Brian White, Ryan Gold, Remco, Sebastian, Sabi, Sam, Matthias wouldn't be in the starting lineup, I would probably say, it's not good. But, but now they were not in the starting lineup, and I could also maybe name a few others. So, and it's also what you make of it. From the most important thing for me is to give players the confidence when they play, is to give them a realistic task on the pitch. Mm-hmm. So if we play Tate Johnson instead of Sam, we have given him a different role than Sam had. Sam, he was often brought in as a winger, attacking the last line. With his physicality, he could run up and down the pitch when he was at his best. Tate was not the same. We had to cover him a little bit. So we hold him back in the build-up. He's a very good passer, and don't want him to end up in very bad situations defensively that we believe that he will struggle handling. So I think that's very important that we... And then he has built himself into the team, so now he can do more and more. I think that's very important. You give that the player also has the feeling that he's not playing alone in there. So when Giuseppe Bovalina plays in Minnesota, and also Jeevan Badwell, they haven't started before, then you also have strong players around them that can surround them, and you have a strong structure where they know that they can lean upon some things we do in the team. So they don't play, they don't have to play their own game. They just have to play within the structure of the team together with their teammates, and then they can be helped out, and then next time they can do more and more.
Have you found that the travel to be intensive? I mean, obviously in Europe and Denmark, you're not flying from game to game. In England, we very rarely flew. It was better just to take a coach up to Newcastle or whatever. Have you found it a little bit difficult or certainly different from what you're used to in Europe?
You're underestimating. Yeah, I found it very much different than what I'm used to. But we also been to Costa Rica, Mexico twice. Yeah,
you said the taxes were the same. So was it high taxes, right? So you're used to that.
No, I would say this is very much different. The way we travel like this, and how far it is. I think. That's also one thing for me. It's so interesting. Every time I go somewhere, it's my first time there. St. Louis was completely different from Minneapolis, was completely different from Miami. And it's so much fun right now. Of course, these times we talk a lot about US and stuff, but people just have to realize how much different there is also within one country. So I think it's very interesting to also get that knowledge and also get the experiences. So, but it's very different with the traveling, and it's hot and it's hard. It's hard also with the time difference. Mm-hmm. I can feel it on my body. I'm also above 50, so I'm a little older now, but I can definitely feel it. So when we have a trip to St. Louis where it's a 2 hour difference, I think it's hard. You know, you wake up early in the morning and you're a little bit tired. You don't sleep that well, and I think it's something that you have to consider also when you think about the players, how they have to perform.
Yes, but there's a tradition here on Footy Prime for first timers. It's a rapid fire segment which Dan Wong, just below you there, will spit a bunch of questions to you. Rapid fire. We apologize in advance. Questions. I'm not sure what they are. Wow, that's painful. I'm not sure what the questions are, but Dan does, and that in itself is very concerning. But Wonga, take it away.
All right. Jesper Sorensen, you're gonna play Get to Know Me on Footy Prime. So first question, you're at home and watching Netflix. What type of movie are you watching? A documentary, a thriller, a romantic comedy, or a drama?
Documentary.
It's vacation time and you are exploring Canada. What's your ideal holiday? Lakeside cottage, maritime beach, Rocky Mountains, or stay home city adventure?
Rocky Mountains.
I like that. You have a role. This is my favorite question. You have a role on a TV show. And for that role, you need to add 30 pounds. What's your go-to junk food? Oof.
Just in general?
Yeah, like 30 pounds you have to put on for this role.
Ooh.
What are you eating?
Yeah, chocolate. There?
Chocolate.
I'll eat a lot of chocolate, I think.
All right. I was hoping you were going to say a Danish.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a tough one, but I'm hoping it doesn't happen. Unfortunately, Denmark does not qualify for the World Cup. Who do you cheer for?
Canada.
Yes, Jesper.
What if Canada doesn't make it? I'm going to put you more on the spot.
They host it.
There you go.
He's not doing it. He's not giving it to us. You were a player, a coach, but the big question is, what sport would you have played professionally if it weren't for soccer?
Badminton.
Oh, yes.
Amazing. Really.
And here's our music question. You're on a desert island and you get to choose one decade of music. What decade do you choose? 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or the 2000s, the aughts?
80s.
Nice. Yeah, thank God. And final bonus question. There's a little diagonal line in your O in Sorensen. Yeah. What is that called? And you've just played Get to Know Me on Footy Prime yesterday.
We know all about you now.
Yes, I know.
You know enough now, huh?
Yeah. We want more.
Yeah, thanks, Jesper. Really appreciate you coming on.
Next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Continue success, Jesper. It's been, I think, just such a great story, not just for Vancouver, but for Canadian soccer in general. Even those fans in certain other cities in this country are, I think, deep down pretty happy to see you guys do so well in CONCACAF. So good luck. And we hope to chat to you at some point later this season.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye, Jesper. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
That is Jesper Sorensen.
Axel looks like he's in a hotel room.
I am. I'm in the hotel room in New York.
And so US Open? US Open? Being,
no, I was at the US game. I was at the US game. And we have sporting director meeting in Nashville starting this evening. So I connected the two things and I'm flying in a couple hours to Nashville.
See, I was going to ask you, it's an international break. Is this a time for you to forget about football and just, you know, golf or whatever you do? But no, it never stops right for a sporting director. This is actually a pretty busy week for you.
Yeah, you know what? It never stops. And I say only maybe between Christmas and New Year. But even then, some agents find you and want to recommend you the next player. So that never stops. You have to find your pocket. I'm doing this now more than 25 years, so I'm very good in finding my pockets where I can switch off and can spend some time with my family. But it's not the normal life, but therefore it's a very exciting life.
It must have been a big decision, Axel, when you made the move over to MLS from the Bundesliga and your experience there in Germany, vast experience. It must have been a big decision for you to make that move into a completely different set up with MLS, with all the different rules and things that go on with it, that is very different from European football in general, isn't it?
Yeah, somehow that also was attractive for me because I was doing this for a very long time already in Germany. And now going from Germany to another European country is mainly changing language and maybe a little bit the league, but not the setup. So it was probably the one thing that really attracted me. Honestly, I was actually speaking with the headhunter about the job in England when he asked me if he can also introduce me in this project. And so I joined it very curious. And when I made the third round and it was one of the final candidates, I actually said to my wife, so we now finally have to make a decision if we really want to do this. And so some of the best things just happened by chance. And this is one of that.
I know you're not huge on social media, Axel, but your Twitter bio says, look at life through the windshield, not the rearview mirror. Now, that is really apt this year in Vancouver for you. It's been some season from the potential of a club sale to signing Thomas Muller. It seems the windshield's pretty clear at the moment and the view's pretty great. How's this season evolved? Are you surprised by the way it's happened?
First of all, it's not over yet, so we still have the goal to play a better season than the year before, and you can measure that on different metrics. So one is actually also to go deeper into the playoffs, so we haven't done that yet. But obviously, yes, the season is one of the best in the history of the franchise so far. And yes, sometimes you as a leader have to say things because you absolutely believe that that might happen, but you are not sure that it really happens. So I really had to believe that we have everything together to play a better season and to stay away from all those dark clouds, the sale, and this will be a transition season and this will be not very good. And so I said it from the beginning because I knew what kind of a good group we had and that we kept all the pieces together. We got new energy from a new coach. And so, yeah, sometimes as a leader, you're also lucky that some of the things you say a long time ago really happened then later. But I had definitely the belief in this group. And I think in my exit meetings with a lot of players, when I had the feeling our energy was a little bit lower at the end of last year, there was no doubt that the players had the belief that we had the quality and we had the right group together to play better. So, yeah, it was to get all the pieces together. And luckily with Jesper, we found the right coach for it.
So if you look back to when the season started, you would never have foreseen then that at some point this year you'd be signing a player of Thomas Müller's stature. Is that fair to say?
That's very fair to say. I wouldn't have believed it 4 weeks before it happened, maybe not 2 weeks before it really happened. And we really, until the moment he really signed, we were all thinking, maybe tomorrow something better comes around the corner that he considers as something better and it will not happen. So yes, that's maybe the one in a lifetime where all the pieces come together in a way that's not very often happening, that somebody is looking for a move outside of Europe, at the same time wants to have stability, wants also to live at a nice place, but is still super competitive, also wants to look for a team that is competing for titles. And then that for our, in our case, obviously also the financial terms are not the decisive thing for him, because he could have made way more money somewhere else. So all those pieces coming together, and then you also have an opening, and you also need to have a DB spot open in the future, and you also need to have that flexibility on your roster, and you also need to have the position open on the pitch. So yeah, there are so many things that came together. I cannot even remember all of them, and this was the one in a lifetime constellation.
How did that come about in the conversation, Axel? Sorry, Amy, about let's contact his representatives, you know, Mueller, and let's throw it against the wall and see whether he wants to come. How did that actually all pan out?
No, it was actually almost the opposite. So when another club in MLS was obviously not the landing point for him, and the league got aware about that, the league actually has reached out to a few clubs and said, are you interested, or would you consider to speak with Thomas Müller? And because I'm German, I was probably one of them. And that time I told the league, look, we don't have a DP spot open, and we have a turf pitch in our stadium. And they said, ah, yeah, right, you're probably not the right landing spot. So then it moved away. So, and it was actually later that the agent who I know reached out to me and said, hey, can we just speak? And I understand that you're not in, and you're not interested in signing Thomas, but I, from German to German, I would like to understand a little bit about some mechanisms in the league. And so my first sentence to him was, when we were on the Zoom call, was, never say again that I'm not interested in signing Thomas Müller. I only don't believe it's possible. And that was actually the opening. And then I tell you, 5 minutes later, I had a feeling, okay, the door is a little bit more open. But then for many weeks, I was never sure that he really will sign and that really will happen.
Is Thomas Müller, is he the epitome of an Axel Schuster type player? Like, you look at White, at Berhalter, at Blackman, guys that you've acquired who have become really important pieces for your squad. Like, obviously, Müller's a coup, right? He's like, obviously, German to German, you have that link despite the turf field, but you're able to get him. But it's the way that he integrates and has an impact instantly on your squad. But he's also the type of character first, and obviously the quality, but character first guy that you go out and you recruit, right?
Yeah, look, if you, I would say the thing that you mentioned about me at the beginning with the rear view mirror and front shield was one of the things that I also said in my very first press conference. And I said also that I'm not magic, and that we have to build things and we have to develop things. And part of the development is first to find a foundation and to also be very clear what you want to be. If you're not the biggest one, then you have to be very good in what you do, and you have to narrow it a little bit down. So even on the search of players. So for us, it was always important the whole way that we sign players who fit to our identity, and that I would say our other two DPs, Ryan Gold and Andres Kubas, are a very, very good example of that. Ryan Gold was called a working class DP last year when he was on his run to become the MVP. Andres Kubas is probably one of the hardest working number sixes, a player who really no one likes to play against, and they are the first ones out there to do the dirty work. So Thomas, in this regard, is also a perfect fit, because he has to put the team first, and he did that already in his first press conference with his first actions. Even with a few little things that he even did before he arrived. So that's first. And he was always this guy. And then he is obviously a player that makes other players better, who doesn't shine on himself. Obviously, yes, he also does that. But whose first skill is to find the spaces, find spaces also for his teammates with that, and with his intelligence to lead the game, and also to help other players to find better positions on the pitch, to find help other players to get the right direction on the pitch. And he did that from the first second. So in combination, yes, he is the perfect player for us, because we have a group that I would say, has no big egos. And Thomas, although he's that big star, has not a big ego. And the only thing that he wants is that his team is successful. And for that, he has no problem to do what is needed to help his players to be better. And that in combination makes the team better.
Any other news that you want him to break on the dais, like you did with Tristan Blackman's inclusion in the U.S. men's national team roster? Are you going to send him out to do that as well?
You know, that's another part, and it's amazing for me to see how well that translates right away in interviews in English, because he was amazing and he was outstanding doing this in German, being also a little bit entertaining, because at the end also we're an entertaining business, and also to find the right balance on and off the pitch, being very, very competitive, no excuses on the pitch, being hungry and very, very, I would say also directional towards the goal. But at the other time, at another time, also having fun and being relaxed is also part of what you have to have in the locker room. You cannot always be focused. You cannot be 24 hours focused. You cannot be 6 hours before the game all the way focused. And so you have to find a balance. And Derry is also very, very good in that, and making a joke, or also, yeah, sometimes just get everyone back on ground and just thinking about what really matters in life. I think that's was another quality that we knew. But long story short, we have signed him as a player first on the pitch, and that was very important for him. So all of these other things are just nice also to have on the side.
But he joins a really good team already, which really helps. He's not being brought to be the savior. I think often when you see these big names come aboard to be the savior, it's a lot of pressure. But you have a team that's already contending without Thomas Muller. I think Amy mentioned the Blackman, Berhalter, and White signings, all within a few weeks of each other, almost at the tipping point when the switch was hit for this team to become a really, really strong outfit. Vanni Sartini was the man. And he did a great job at Vancouver, but the time came when it's time for a change. What does Jesper bring, perhaps, that Vanny didn't?
Yeah, first, I want to say quickly one, two sentences to what you said. First up, yes, we have been an outstanding team. We have been the best team in MLS for the first half of the season already. But still, we lost the Champions League final, and we know how close we have been last year in a series of three against LAFC, and it was a game by inches, and we lost it. And what Thomas also brings us, and that's one thing we were looking for, is this experience, this leadership, also this being this person, this player on the pitch in these tight games where others can look up to in a difficult moment. So we hope that this helps us to go this inch further and win those games. What Jesper is doing differently, so first of all, he's different. That helps him already, because when he was here for 3.5 years and it was a very, very good time, he helped the club along the way and has helped to develop this team. But 3.5 is in this business already very, very long, unfortunately. But that's also reality. If you look at the average times a coach is coaching, that's way less. So Jesper had the advantage to come in and being something fresh, something new, somebody who uses different words, maybe for the same things, and that looks then completely or sounds completely different, and you get more attraction from the players. He also, with coming in as a new manager, you also, I would say, shake things a little bit through. Everyone is, or no one can be sure that he has still the same status, that he will still play the same minutes. So you have to compete for that. So from the first moment in preseason, we had a lot of energy. And then, yes, of course, he's doing a few things different. And that doesn't mean that things before have not been right. But, you know, also this team got to the point where he said, look, we went so far, but something was missing. And so there was a big openness also to try something else out. What works very, very well from the first moment, and it works well even with some of our key players being out. So we have a very strong structure on that we can rely, and we are way more dominant this year. We are one of the teams with the highest possession in ball. And so it's also then at the end of the day, a little bit luck, because if you go back to the beginning of the season, we won also games, or we made it through a first round in the Champions League that was very tight. We lost in Costa Rica the very first game. So for a long time, people said we haven't lost a game, but that wasn't actually true, because we were losing the first game in Costa Rica, but we made up in the second leg for it. So you also then have to be lucky that the results come your way in Portland, and with an amazing win in the first game of the season. And then things were taking off, and the belief was growing. And now we have a team that believes in the system, but also believes in themselves and believes in the coach. And that's the best combination you can have.
Got to ask you. So you obviously spent many years at Mainz in Germany and working closely with Jürgen Klopp. There's a couple of Liverpool fans on this podcast, myself included. Was there ever a thought to give him a call last summer before you signed Jesper? Got to ask a question.
No. first of all, he was already doing his job in Leipzig at that time, or for the Red Bulls, not Leipzig. And second, he was very clear about that he doesn't want to go back to coaching. So not at all. So I know what he's looking for, what he's doing right now. So I haven't even tried.
Well, he's doing, is it Trivago, right? Isn't he in the
he's doing commercial. Yeah.
He's in anywhere right now. It's Jürgen Klopp. I wonder how many Canadians actually know who he is when those commercials pop up.
Yeah, a lot of Americans just refer to him as the guy with the teeth. So I'm sure many Canadians who aren't well-versed in football think the same thing.
We interviewed Jaden Nelson over the weekend, and I asked him, you know, what would Axel Schuster say about him? And I said, oh, we will ask Axel about you, so we must ask you. It's one of those transfers that kind of went under the radar a little bit when it happened, but within the first couple of weeks, we all saw the quality that Jaden has. How has he fit in Vancouver?
Yeah. We are used that our new signings sometimes are a little bit under the radar and people don't recognize them right away as a good transfer. So that's fine. We had a very high opinion about him. We actually went after him or already asked him half a year before. And so when that loan had not worked out and we came back, he was pretty excited because we were not just picking up on a situation that now recently happened. We actually thought about him already a long time before. And it was a surprise for me. And I think we all have to be a little bit careful, and I include myself, to judge too early about players. When we signed him, there were some comments out that his career is already over and he had already his best time. And the kid was only 21 at that time. So I think the best thing of it is that he went through this struggle, and that has helped him to mature more, and also to understand that even in soccer, it's not always going straight upwards, and you have to overcome such struggle, and you have to learn how to overcome those moments, and that has made him a more complete player, and that has made him more resilient. And then on top, his attributes of being so fast, being somebody who gets things to the end with goal contributions, and somebody who is a real competitor. And that's actually something I spoke with him a couple of months ago, that he has to find a better balance of using his emotions, because sometimes he was not using his emotions in the right way. So he got actually a suspension for that. And I think recently, in the last couple of games, he's doing way better with it and use it in the right way to win the battles, and then to try to calm down if it gets a little bit heated up. So he's still young, and he has still a long career ahead of him. And we are very happy that he is with us and that we can help him maybe to grow and to develop to a better player now.
Plus, I just want to say, Axel, with that hairdo, he really should be on the pitch almost every beginning of every game. Just as like, hey, I'm going to be a center star out there. I mean, do you get a little jealous of that hairdo? I'm just wondering.
I do.
I know you do.
It looks good. Hey, Axel, away from the pitch here, regarding the pitch, though, what's the plan for the grass for the World Cup? When will that be going in exactly?
The grass is... We're still negotiating with the stadium, but the stadium with the company, so it will be a couple of weeks. It's not a master science, honestly. I always try to remind people that at the last World Cup in the US, grass was put into the Silver Dome. Germany played in that stadium, so I remember that. So that's a couple of years ago. So that with the technique of today and the science of today, it's not too complicated, and it has been done before for games. So the only thing is that there are some FIFA regulations about when the grass has to be in and from what time on it cannot be touched. And we're working with FIFA and BC Plays around it. It will be a couple of weeks. It will mean that we have to play a couple of road games at that time before the World Cup starts. But also that is business as usual for us, because last season I think we played 7 games on the road in a row. So it's also not happening to us the first time, and it's not happening because of a World Cup. So it is what it is. I'm also very good in accepting realities and not to try to spend too much energy into it, because it doesn't help you. And let's then spend the energy on how to deal with it.
Actually, I wanted to ask you about your feel and like your finger on the pulse of the soccer culture in Vancouver. We know the history that's there, but the pivot and the 180 from ownership looking to sell and now looking for a partner and potentially a new build, but then also the addition of the Vancouver Rise and obviously the CPL clubs that are in the area too. Like, just do you feel a shift that's tangible, that maybe you're going somewhere, you're growing, that those roots that are there is the foundation and then you're just adding to that now?
You know what? I'm not there that long, so I don't know too much about the past, or at least not from experience it myself. I obviously know some of the stories. And then we had the COVID right at the beginning. So for me, this is only starts sure. really after COVID. Since then, I feel the vibe, and I feel that there is a real soccer community, and also a real big supportership group. And you see that if it really matters, they show up. And they show up for Rise games as well. So there's a general interest and understanding for the game. I also can feel it because so many people really recognize me in the city, so they obviously follow it somehow. But there's more we can do. And I think what I think we hopefully get from the World Cup is more options for kids to play the sport, maybe also more fully funded options, because that's where I'm coming from. It's something that doesn't exist. So but the other way around, in where I'm coming from, the sport is for free for every kid. Mm-hmm. And so you get more kids into the sport, obviously. And that's something we try to work on also as an organization, with our Academy Center program. And then I think there will be anyway a boost coming from the World Cup. And if Canada is doing well, what I hope and what I believe in, then a lot of kids want to play mm-hmm. soccer and want to be like the stars. And so, yeah, we're working on that. I think there's a great foundation. I think we have a real soccer market. And a tradition there as well. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes a little bit harder to activate everyone to get him out, because we compete. I always say we are not competing with the Canucks, and we're not competing with Lions. We are competing with the wonderful landscape of British Columbia, right. The islands, and all the wonderful activities you can do. And I get it. So if there's a beautiful day and there's a family, you say let's go hiking, and then you're not making it back for the game. We have to find ways that the games are the most important thing for those people at the weekend. And then they go hiking at the other weekend. But it's always good to have some space to grow.
when you get back as far as the World Cup goes, and is it going to be a seismic shift here in Canada? We saw it, I guess, in early 2000s with Korea and Japan, and what that meant having the World Cup. I'm sort of up in the air as far as the actual impact it'll have, whether it'll be big or whether it'll just be, you know, a continuing on of baby steps that we've been doing for like the last 40 years. What's your opinion on that?
Okay, Korea, I was there, Korea and Japan, and we played Korea in the semifinals. I was at the game, and obviously that was a big piece to it because Korea was so successful in the World Cup and made it to the semifinals. And so a whole nation became soccer fans. So we also need the Canadian team to do well, US team as well. I think what people will only really recognize when the games are coming, and we have seven in Vancouver, is how big each event is, how big this game is worldwide, how many people are coming, how many people are excited about this sport. And I hope that they pick up of this vibe, And it gets him a little bit more connected to the sport. I don't think that only because we have seven World Cup games, after that more people will buy tickets automatically. We need also to find a connection to our club and the connection to the sport in general, and not only to the event. Right now, there's also a possibility that a lot of people come to see the event, and a lot of people will also come from outside of the city or outside our country to support their home nations. So we still need to also be very good, and we are working on that, and we will have a lot of activations around the World Cup to build this bridge. And I say youth soccer and soccer legacy is an important one for me. And other than that, we have to continue to do a good job as a club itself. We are sold out for the last two games. We are sold out for the next game. And you see that the excitement is there, and keeping this excitement alive, and also to be meaningful in the market around this World Cup event is definitely helpful.
Axel, final question. We have to ask it. It does seem, given the recent comments from ownership and the fact that you're signing players like Thomas Müller, there's a definite commitment to keep Vancouver Whitecaps in Vancouver. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, I'm not getting tired to say that on every single platform where I'm getting asked. And thank you for the question. We have never said something different. Because from the first moment I said that our first plane A, B, C, D, all the way through to X and Y is to find a solution to keep the club in Vancouver. I understand that people in general always first think the bad things, and that this always, for whatever reason, we humans are like that. We always think the bad thing is more likely than the good thing. Mm. But it's also probably connected to what happened with the Grizzlies at some point.
Yeah.
But we are really focused and working on a solution in Vancouver. So when we had this news a few weeks ago, a lot of people said, "Oh, now you change the approach." No, this was one of the A to XY. So it was always there, and we are continuing to work on that. I also said our ownership group is not running away. Part of them live in Vancouver, and they are very committed to the city. And they only think about the right moment for a good transition to a next group. And I think this is a very good thing, because as long as you do it at the time where you have the time and where you have everything in your own hands, and you can make the right decision and can also wait for the right solution, there's a higher likelihood that you get to a good solution. So this is unchanged. The news about looking into a new stadium, the news about looking into different models, everything is aligned with our strategy. And I think I said also at the beginning that no one, and not saying that you were asking me, but that no one has to be nervous if there are no news after 6 months, because it might be a 2-year process. So, and then we are just only 25%, almost, or 30% now, maybe. So it's all on track, and we will continue to work. And what I also said, all of this should never impact our day-to-day business, because we want to keep the club in Vancouver, so we have to make sure that the club grows. And that was also something that I told Jesper and I told Thomas, when you come here, this will not impact your work at all. You will not even notice it. And that's what I have to make sure. And then I can work in the background on supporting the ownership group on finding the right solution.
One quick one before you go. Sorry, Sharms. Axel, do you go on bike rides with Jesper and Thomas? And can
Are you
ask,
holding hands?
Yeah,
while and can you bike ride?
Bicycle built for three, maybe. And then can you tell Thomas to come on the podcast, please? Thank you.
Great. Yeah.
Now
yeah.
I'm more a runner and walker. So
okay.
I'm living in Olympic Village, and you can see me on the seawall and doing long walks there. All the way downtown Grand Stanley Park,
yeah,
and back. So Jesper is also probably too fast for me. So I know that our assistant coach sometimes tries to bike with him, and it's pretty challenging.
Okay.
So and I will speak with Thomas.
okay. Sounds good.
We appreciate that.
Not immediately, but maybe in a couple of weeks. Yes. We will.
That'd be great.
Sounds good.
Axel, thank you so much. And listen, congratulations on what's been a fantastic season so far. We're all rooting for you here for sure. Yeah. To win this whole thing. You're not back in action till the 13th. Philly is in town. We'll be watching that and looking forward to the next step for Thomas Müller as well as the Caps. But thank you so much for joining us.
Now, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Axel.
Thank you.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeIG and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter if we ever make one.
We've done it again. We've made friends with another coach, and it can break our hearts.